Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. And
I cursed us today.
Oh my goodness. And today we're going to be talking about everything you never knew you wanted to know about oak galls.
Galls, G-A-L-L-S?
Yes. And I am going to send you a picture of oak galls. I saw these on Instagram.
They look like berries. Is that actually attached to the leaf?
Yes, it is.
Weird.
They're about marble size, or they can be bigger, and they can grow off of stems. These are on the leaves.
That's wild.
They're like red and yellow.
Yeah, like a golden delicious apple.
Yeah, hanging on the leaf.
Yes, it's like you plunk, just popped it on there randomly, like a kid doing a craft, and you're like, put these acorns, blah, blah, and they just stick them right on the leaves.
Yeah, and they are perfectly round, smooth on the outside. And oh, and here's the other thing. Also, they can be this nice round shape. They can be, I've seen others described as Hershey's Kiss shaped.
Okay.
I saw some that looked like tumors. They just looked awful. Like, oh, that's not a good thing. Well, let's talk about what's going on inside. So these teeny little weird balls grow out of leaves and branches because of a teeny, teeny, tiny wasp, about a quarter of an inch at most, called the oak gall wasp.
I didn't think we were going there. I did not expect this turn. I thought it was, all right, so there's a wasp. Okay.
It's a little tiny bug, itty bitty, and they are attracted to certain trees, different oak trees. Oh, and it's so funny. There's two species of these oak gall wasps in the United States. There's many, many species, but I love the names of these. One is the horned oak gall wasp, and the other one is the gouty oak gall wasp.
Oh, I absolutely am team gouty oak gall wasp.
Right? I imagine it being like, I'm so creaky today. I can't get out.
Yes, I really shouldn't have had that hamburger.
Exactly. But these wasps, the females, they lay their eggs under the flesh of an oak's limb. So under the bark or in a budding leaf. And then as the larvae hatches, it secretes chemicals that cause swelling in that area, and that swelling becomes the gall.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now I'm surprised these turn out perfectly round then, based on the how they start.
Yes, I agree, because the ones that look like terrible tumors, or they're kind of like Hershey's Kiss shape, that makes sense. But these perfectly round ones are a puzzle to me.
I want to cut one open and see what's inside, and have many questions.
Well, if you did cut one open, so what's inside there is either one baby bug, because some of them lay just one, others lay multiples. So you cut that open, it could be a bunch of little larvae, you know, little maggoty guys.
Okay, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm. Crawling around in there. And they use the gall as a shield, as protection. And then also it's kind of like their playpen, and they're in there feeding on the plant.
Ew, do you think that if you listened that they would make noise?
Maybe. Like you might hear a weird echoing chewing sound.
Yeah, or sort of a swishing kind of sound. I'm creeped out. And I was also thinking these are absolutely the sort of thing that you would throw at your friends in childhood. But I'm guessing if you live in an area where these are common and you have one mishap, you never do it again, because you splat one open and you're covered in like larva, and yikes.
Yes, but here's the thing. Remember that the bug is only a quarter inch.
Yeah, but still gross. So that's a really big thick shell that it develops around it.
Super thick. Yeah, okay. But here's the weird thing. So I was looking at these and I was thinking, well, that's got to be terrible for the tree. But most arborists, you know, tree doctors, they are like, it doesn't really harm the tree. In fact, it can be an indicator of some health, and that you just leave it alone.
Wow. I guess it is localized to a specific spot where a bug landed, and it's not coming from somewhere else in the tree.
Yeah. So it's just on there, and they are kind of thick. They have a thicker shell. And as the season goes, they kind of dry out. The little wasp chews out these perfectly little round holes. It kind of looks like, you know, it just has the little, like somebody put a juice box straw through it. you know? And then they fly away and the gall stays on the tree and it dries out and it goes from that red color to like a dried out brown. But so here's the weird and cool thing about oak galls. Way back in the day, like Romans, people figured out that you could take the galls and use them to make ink.
Ooh, really? What color?
Well, okay. So I'm going to take a short detour. So when I was a kid, we'd go to this lake called Buck Lake, and it was surrounded by alder trees. There were so many leaves in the water that the tannins in the leaves, this bitter water-soluble polyphenol, it's in plant food like leaves, seeds, and bark and wood, those tannins. In fact, when you put tea in water, the tannins come out, right? And it color the water. Well, the water in this lake was orangey.
Ooh, wild.
Yeah. I can remember being a kid imagining I was swimming in a cup of tea. It was that tanniny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that can't have been good for our skin. Thanks, parents. Thank you, 1980s.
Maybe you needed a little acid bath. Do you think that was acidic?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Just takes off a few dead skin cells.
It's okay. It's exfoliating. It was like a spa.
Yes. All you need is those little fish to bite the skin off your toes.
There you go. No, instead it was those weird hot spots that you swim through, like somebody has peed in the water.
Oh, that would be odd.
Yeah. Good quality lake. Anyway, so so you got your oak galls and they have tannins in them and they have a lot of tannins in them. So the Romans probably noticed this staining, you know, maybe rain, you know, on the trees or they're on the ground. And so they figured out if you took oak galls and boiled them in water, you'd make this really rich brown tea looking water. And then if you added iron salts, so like rusty kind of stuff, it reacts with the tannins and it makes a dark black ink.
Oh, wow.
Right?
I do like that aspect of like how they do that in pottery too, that chemical reaction to make a color from an unexpected. That's fun.
Yes. They could mix things into it to make it thicker so that it would be not just watery. So you could dip a pen or something into it and write with it. It's such a good ink if you mix it right. Now, if you put too much iron in there, it becomes really acidic. And when you use it, it'll eat your pages. But if you mixed it correctly, like monks loved this ink for writing because it would last. So I was looking at pages from the Canterbury Tales that were estimated to be illustrated around 1400. That's 622 years ago. And the ink was not faded.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Because, yeah, you do see so many old texts that are well protected and still very, very faded.
Yeah, because that ink is oxidizing. And so that was another thing. So you make this oak gall ink. If you didn't keep it in a bottle that was capped, the oxygen in the air would make all of the colored parts of it precipitate out. So you would have this really watery ink with this chunky stuff at the bottom. So it was definitely a make it and use it sort of item.
Yeah.
But it was used as the most popular thing for a really long time.
Yeah, because all you need is a population of wasps, which then you're killing by taking these, but or you're helping them not to propagate further. But
well, that's true. And you could wait. You can wait until the bugs are gone and then take these dried things and then you're good to go. So from this humble bug making its little playpen on an oak tree to an ink used. So it's used in Roman times to our oldest known Bible was written with this ink.
Wow.
The U.S. Postal Service had their own preferred recipe for their customers to address envelopes.
That makes sense. You got to be able to see it.
So this little ball of something on an oak tree shaped human history.
Yeah, that's amazing. From just a little. So the wasp lays an egg on the leaf.
Kind of in it.
In the leaf.
In it,
in the leaf, which causes it to. What I'm curious about is the instruction that I suppose that depends on the tree then, how it responds and creates this thing? Or does the wasp lay the egg?
The larva excrete chemicals that make the leaf do something different. Yeah, I imagine that those chemicals react with different trees in different places to make a different shaped thing.
Yeah, okay.
Each kind of wasp kind of creates a different shaped gall. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one entomological website that I was looking at, they were like, oh, I knew that this particular gall came from this particular wasp because of its shape and size.
It's the wasp, not the tree. So something in the chemical gives the instruction. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then I have a weird left turn gall wasp fact.
I'm ready.
Alfred Kinsey. That's the guy that came up with the Kinsey scale for the spectrum of human sexuality.
Oh, sure.
Before he got on that track, he did his Harvard doctoral thesis on gall wasps.
Really?
Yeah. And the American Museum of Natural History in New York City has Kinsey's, 7.5 million wasp collection.
What?
Yes.
How even? Oh my gosh.
Well, he collected specimens from 36 states and around the world. He had people who would send him galls. He would go out and collect them. And he just felt like the more data we have, the more bugs.
Yeah.
It was the most important thing. But here's the funny thing. So he was very, like, he came up with different ways of cataloging them. And these are teeny tiny bugs. And he's, how long is the leg? And what does the thorax look like? And all these data points.
Wow.
Well, so he had this basis of coming up with, let's get a big batch of data and use that to answer questions about teeny tiny wasps.
Yeah.
But then he was asked to teach a course on marriage in 1938.
So he was entrenched in gall wasp research.
And bugs of all kinds and doing research. And they're like, hey, Kinsey, we've got an open space. Could you do this thing on marriage? And it was supposed to prepare students for marriage by teaching them facts about sex and sexuality. And I love that this is a college course. What were we doing in 1938? I just don't even know. And because of his background of, I'm going to just inundate us with data, like 7.5 million wasps, data points.
Oh my gosh.
He did the same thing with people. And that's how he figured out his Kinsey scale.
Wow. That is a left turn. But his character and behavior are definitely consistent, like that pursuit of the data. Wow. Is he the person they've done a TV show about then? I feel like there's a TV show that features him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a character. Huh.
Because he was kind of the first person who they were interviewing people, because I looked a little bit into the scale, because I was like, I knew what it was called, but it's this whole scale that by talking with this person about their personal experiences, they were putting you on a heterosexual, bisexual, or homosexual sliding scale with him feeling like most people were more in the middle of that bisexual somewhere.
Well, and the way he collects data, how can you really argue with that?
I know. He's like, I have 11,000 data points. What do you have?
We have some strong opinions.
It's not like some of these studies that we do where you're like, wait, that was only 40 people. How are you making a decision on that?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh, scientists, you never fail to surprise us and delight us.
It's so great. So little tiny wasp changing the world, helping us write things down. All the way to science and human sexuality. I love brain junk.
Me too. That's a really wide spectrum from one little wasp.
Yep.
I love it. Well, if you have a collection of gall wasps that you'd like to share with us, or if you've made some of your own ink from the maple galls, please do let us know. You can do that at brainjunkpodcast.com. You can hit us up on Facebook and Instagram, of course, where we're also Brain Junk Podcast. Pop on there. Let us know. And please, wherever you listen, like and subscribe to the show. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.